8:15, having arrived, I'm going to call the Education Finance Committee to order, and the agenda today is to go over House File 3171, the omnibus education finance bill for this year. And once we get going here, we'll be going over the spreadsheet first, and then we'll do a walkthrough, and then questions, and then testimony from the audience. And before we get going, I'd first of all like to thank our wonderful staff. Especially this being a shortened session, staff is working in overdrive and overtime. And so just thank you so much for all the great work and putting things together. And partisan staff, thank you for putting all your briefs together during this year. I mean, we've heard a lot of bills and in a very short amount of time. So thank you so much for that. Members, thank you for the work here. Thank you, mainly from this area. I don't see too many on this side yet today.
Mr. Chair, we're prepared to vote on this.
Yes. Well, we need to take some time and listen to things. But I do want to thank members for your questions and that. It does really help hone in on the things that are in this bill to make them a lot better. And the idea of this bill not being a non-budget year was really to continue and carry on with the momentum that we had last year, in which I think we did turn the dial on things, on getting more funding, trying to reverse the disinvestments that have occurred in the last few years. We tried to focus on things that had a proven track record of creating results and lowering the achievement gap, things like early childhood learning. We put $40 million last year, unprecedented, into that, all-day, everyday kindergarten, the resources to get to the world's best workforce. And one of the things we ended up doing is also really decreasing the disparity between the high-revenue districts and the low-revenue districts, which I thought was very positive. So the bill you have before you here is really continuing that momentum, moving in the right direction. As you can see, the bulwark of it is the 1% on the formula. And that is to make sure that, last year with the world's best workforce being created and districts having some very high goals, having a very high bar to strive to hit those goals of the world's best workforce, these will be the resources to help you continue to do that. And, included on the world's best workforce in the language on the tests or on the reports and that is also looking at the teacher evaluation system. And I'm not going to pretend we have dealt with the teacher evaluation system here. But there is a study group that's looking at right now how to kind of put the QCOMP together with the teacher evaluation system together. But I do think with the funds that were enacted last year, and even with the 1% here, is going to allow districts to put together some very efficient teacher evaluation plans. And I think get off to a great start on that. And after 1 year, we can also find out what some of these costs are. So that teacher evaluation system, I think, is going to be a real key to closing the achievement gap, and we want to make sure we do that right. And then the other areas we focused on in the bill was really how can we drill down and look at how we can close the achievement gap. And, one of the areas is the big area is Chair Mariani's English language learners. And, when you look at the data, the 2013 MCAs that came out, and in math, when 61% total were proficient, ELL students were 28%. When it came to reading, when the total was about 58%, ELL was 17%. And when it came to science, only 12% of ELL students are proficient compared to a general population of about 53%. Graduation rates, even though they went up to about 79.5%, for ELL it's about 58.5%. So that is our huge, huge area we have to focus on. This bill does that. And then you look at some of the other areas, the Neighborhood Association, achievement zones, where you're really kind of taking all the stakeholders. I think it's an excellent model. Take all the stakeholders, bring them together to address a lot of the concerns You have the telecommunications we've invested in. And so as you kind of look through a number of the items, they were chosen in here to close the achievement gap, to really zero in on some of the things we need to do to create the world's best workforce. So again, members, thank you for your work on this, and thanks for the questions and the discussion to really get to what I think is a bill that addresses the goals of this committee that we've established the last couple of years. So Representative Woodard, any comments that you might have?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would echo your appreciation of the staff, both partisan and nonpartisan, on this committee and this committee in general. We all serve on other committees, and this is my favorite committee for sure, and a lot of that is due to your leadership and the respect that this committee has and the common goal that we have for education in Minnesota. So I certainly applaud the effort of you and the staff as well. Of course, I think this bill has a little bit more hope than change. I think the last one did as well. We'd like to see greater reform in our education system, and I know that we're spending more money, but I don't think that that is going to necessarily relate to better performance. We would like to see more on the scholarships, on the Winkler bill. We certainly support that and the movement that is being made under the scholarships, and we're disappointed not to see that in this bill moving forward. So I certainly appreciate the intent, and I think everybody here has the right intent. I just am afraid that what we've done over the last couple of years is by putting more money in and not really looking at some of the mandate relief that both sides of the aisle is constantly looking for, and some of the true reforms that really will move the needle on some of our school districts that are really struggling, that we've got kids where one in two aren't graduating from high school, and we've got the nation's worst achievement gap. And I'm afraid just by sprinkling money here and there on programs that we've tried in the past is not going to be sufficient to do that. So, again, I appreciate all the hard work this committee is doing, and I look forward to continuing, regardless of what happens in the 2015 session, of working with this team and making some of those changes that we'd like to see.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Woodard. Okay, with that, I think we'll start with the spreadsheet. Ms. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The spreadsheet in front of you is the state aid appropriations spreadsheet. As you well know, in education, funding for schools is a mix of state aid and local property tax levies, and this is represents the aid portion of the overall funding for schools. Before I get into the specifics of the different proposals, I wanted to give you just a brief orientation of how the spreadsheet is laid out, so you have a sense of how things work. So for the first set of eight columns, you'll see the governor's 14, 15 in total, and then the House's 14, 15 in total. This is the current biennium that we are budgeting for. For fiscal 14, we're three-quarters of the way through fiscal 14, so we're not going to really be, when we're looking at targets, we're not really addressing FY 14. We're looking at FY 15. So that is that. The most important columns as we move through the spreadsheet are the shaded columns, the fourth and the eighth one, respectively, and those columns will show, in budgeting, we compare everything to the forecast base, and so any changes are reflected in this column. And if you follow these columns all the way through to the last page, you'll see that the totals tie up to what both the governor's target and the House target was. And the governor had a projected target of $1.1 million, and the House had a target of $75 million. So I will, pardon me? Anyway, so, and as we look through the spreadsheet too, the rows throughout the spreadsheet represent the different programs, and they are pretty closely tied to the order in which we put together the omnibus finance bill. So the first article being the general ed, second article being education excellence, third special ed, and so on. I just wanted to jump back quickly to the last set of columns in the spreadsheet are for fiscal 16 and 17. And while we're not budgeting specifically for those years at this point, we do have to be very cognizant of the impact that changes that we contemplate for the current biennium have an impact for the next biennium, or what we consider the budget tails. So we're watching that closely throughout. Okay, so if you take a look at line 5, you'll see the basic formula allowance amount. That is the primary mechanism by which state aid is distributed to schools for their operating dollars, the aid portion of it. Obviously, the locals have their property tax portion as well, but the state aid portion. And if you look at the first column under the governor's FY14, the total or the formula allowance for FY14 is $5,302 per pupil. And as you can, and I have to admit there is an error on House FY14. It should also say $5,302 for fiscal 14. We are not recommending an increase for the current year, which we are almost through. So, but as you can see in the next column for FY15 under the governor's, you'll see that it goes to $5,806, and you would the governor is not recommending an increase to the formula allowance, and so that begs the question of why is that jumping up from $5,308 to $5,806, and that has to do with the pupil weighting changes that we enacted last legislative session, and that has an impact in terms of consolidated some and streamlined the pupil weightings, and in doing so the pot of money stayed the same, but the amount per pupil changed, and so that those dollars are reallocated. So if you take a look then, as Representative or Chair Marquardt mentioned, the House is recommending a 1% increase in the formula. So on line 19 you'll see that a 1% increase, and if you follow that over to the House FY15, that costs around $54.4 million. That represents 90% of the total entitlement, since this is an appropriations tracking. So that is the common way that schools are allocated money. And so for the first year of a program, it would be 90%, and the following would be 100%. And that the reason we do that is because districts, all of the formulas are driven by enrollment projections and eligibility, and to the extent that those are increasing or decreasing can have a huge impact on those general ed dollars. And so 10% is withheld until the following year to make up for any of those changes. So you can see, if you follow across to the next biennium for line 19 at the far end of the page, you'll see that it's $61 million per year for the 1% increase. And this is a great example of how the changes that we are implementing or are suggesting to implement have a significant impact on the tails, and we want to closely monitor those. On line 20, Representative Marquardt also spoke to the ELL changes that are being contemplated. There are three components to this. The first is expanding eligibility from 5 to 6 years for English language learners. The second is to count students who had previously been ineligible for the continued funding because they had passed a test, but if a teacher thinks that a student warrants additional supports, then they could be included in this. And finally, there's a ELL formula that is provided, and we've upped that from $704 per pupil to $726. And so the ultimate goal is to provide about $6 million per year in additional funding for that. So under the House FY15, for line 20, you'll see that's 5.4, that's 90% for the first year, and 6 million for the out years for 16 and 17. For line 21, you'll see the PSEO formula correction. That was something that the governor's bill brought forward, and we chose to carry that. The numbers don't match exactly. I didn't update them. For FY14-15, it's 2.6 under the governor's and 2.7 for ours. That the governor came back and said that there was a slight adjustment to that. And the change for this is that, as was explained last week, is that when the secondary pupil weighting changes were made last year from 1.3 to 1.2, that pupil weighting didn't get formulated down to this particular program, and so by making that correction, there is a slight savings to the general fund, and that carries out through the next biennium as well. And so the House adopted that provision that the governor had recommended. On line 22, you'll see equity changes. Remember yesterday, Representative Fitzsimmons brought forward a recommendation or is formulating a bill that would address equity issues and kind of broadening the definition of what the metro area is for being eligible for equity. And you'll notice that that's not indicated here for the current biennium. This is more of a next biennium issue because it's related both to state aid and local property tax because the equity is an aid and levy mix. For line 25, you'll see consolidation transition revenue. This, you'll remember, was part of Representative Metz's bill that included, as districts are going forward with the process of talking about consolidations, this provides some transition funding for them in those transition years. Currently, it's $100 per pupil, and this provision would increase that to $300 per pupil and make it available for 5 years. And again, this is not a current biennium cost, but it's something that we're tracking for the next biennium. On lines 26, 27, and 50, these items, the non-public pupil revenue and transportation and tribal contract schools, these programs have a specific formula that's tied to increases in the general formula. So as we made a recommendation, or the House made a recommendation of 1%, these programs also increase by the same amount. On line 55, you'll see concurrent enrollment. That's the college and the schools program, and the House's proposal has a one-time increase of about $1.9 million for FY15. On line 58, you'll see the Minnesota Reading Corps, where the House is suggesting a $500,000 increase for the current year and $1 million in the following. Next page. On line 70, the recovery programs, this was Representative Slocum's bill to provide additional supports to students that are in recovery programs, and so this would be $500,000, and this would be in the form of grants that the different schools would be eligible for. On line 88, you'll see debt service equalization, and I don't know if I mentioned, but the House and the governor have a zero levy target, and so the way that we're able to, so to the extent that we're increasing or proposing increases to the property tax levies, we need to offset them in some way. In the House bill, we have recommendations to increase the Safe Schools levy from $10 to $15 per pupil, and that has about a $2.5 million cost. We've incorporated some debt service help for the districts that have been impacted by natural disasters, and that has a levy component as well as a debt service equalization component. And finally, there's a small piece for Representative Halverson's bill to allow District 196, Rosemont, Egan, Apple Valley, to be able to expand the lease levy authority to cover transportation buildings. So that has a small cost. And because of the portion of the levies that are increases, the way that we're able to make that net to zero is to provide in the area where there's a revenue that has a levy and an aid component, we're able to up the equalization portion so that the more of it is aid and less of it is levy to offset that increase. On line 91, the telecommunication access, that was Representative Breinart's bill to provide additional funding of $5 million for the current biennium and $10 million for the next biennium. Line 99 was the school lunch program. That was Representative Seltzer's bill to provide additional aid or for the reduced cost meals, and that's a $3.5 million cost in the current biennium. Turn the page to the next page. On line 125, we'll see school readiness. That was Representative Newton's bill to provide additional funds for school readiness at $2 million per year and $4 million for the next biennium. Health and developmental screening was Representative Dabney's bill, and there's a small amount of $250 for the current and $500 for the next biennium. Line 145 is adult basic education. The growth factor for that had been 3, had been scaled back to 2. Last session we increased it to 2.5, and this specific proposal would bring back that growth factor to 3%. So that has a cost of $213,000 in the current biennium. And then lines 147 and 148 are the Northside Achievement Zone and the St. Paul Promise Neighborhoods Representative Mullery and Moran's bills to provide that targeted services. And the last bit relates to the state agency budget. There's a lot of things that in this bill that we want the department to do, and so we provide some ongoing or one-time funding for those specific things, and I'll go through what those things are. In the base budget, the things that are increasing, we heard Representative Swatsky's bills yesterday for special ed rulemaking changes, and so there's about a 40, I think Representative or Mrs. Hermanson said there was about a $40,000 cost for that one-time rulemaking. We have a provision in our bill about maltreatment of students and reporting on that, and the department estimates that there's a cost to be able to do all the work that is required to be in alignment with that. On line 166, you'll see the Board of School Administrators. There's a $58,000 per year operating increase that has been proposed. On line 167, you'll see the Board of Teaching. That is a one-time allotment of money for the MTLE program as they move forward. On line 170, on the next page, you'll see the Works Museum. That's Representative Luncheski's bill, and that is a one-time appropriation. Line 175 is PEEP. That was Majority Leader Murphy's health insurance bill. As it was seen in front of our committee, it was stood at $1 million, but the appropriation has been estimated to scale back at about $294,000. On line 176, the restrictive procedures. This is related to the special ed and prone restraint issue, and Representative Dabney brought this bill forward and provide some one-time money to the department to help do more research and figure out how we can lessen the incidence of prone restraint. On line 177, there was, as we heard yesterday, a Representative Isaacson's bill for the inventory of career and tech programs. That was a $150,000 appropriation. And as also yesterday with Representative Purcell's bill, the Headwater Science Center grant, a one-time of $50,000. And finally, on line 179, the QComp teacher eval alignment that we're asking the department to look at, which was Representative Breinert's bill, at $25,000. And then finally, on line 189, you'll see the governor had recommended a base adjustment for operating for the Minnesota State Academies, and that's reflected there for $300 per year in increased operating. So on line 214, you'll see that those numbers in the shaded columns tie out to what the proposed budget targets were. Are there any questions?
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and do appreciate your comments about our questions have improved the bills. Wait till you see our amendments and suggestions, how much they could improve them. I'm just looking for clarification on line 215 for the 2014-2015. I'm seeing decreases 4.5 and then 3.8 or 2.9% the previous year. And I'm wondering, you're showing, even though both of those are showing decreases, they're trending lower. The 7.3 and 7.7% increase for the biennium previous, so is that indicating there was a larger amount spent in 2013 and a much smaller amount in 2012? I'm just trying to get the clarification.
Great question, Representative Quam. Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, because this is an appropriation tracking spreadsheet, it tracks how shifts happen, and so when the shift was paid back, the last item, there was a huge chunk. It went from, I want to say, I don't know if it was 86.4 or... It was at the beginning of FY13, it was at 70-30 split, and then it went to, by the end of the biennium, it was 86.4, and then after the session ended, it came back to 90. So there was a big chunk of money that on appropriations basis was sent out in FY13 to make up for when the shift had been in place, and so that's why it looks artificially like it went down, but it was not.
So Mr. Chair,
Representative Quam.
Okay, so that confirms that the as was clarified with Dr. Melcher, I believe last week, that the vast majority of the stealing from our kids' dollars shift was paid back in 2013. Thank you.
Yes, yeah, thank you. Any other questions on the Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if you had a target for your tails.
Yes, we do, and it's at 170, Representative Erickson. And I think that's noted in that last column. Any other questions? All right, Ms. Johnson, thank you so much. Mr. Strom? And I would ask, and we saw the governor's bill the other day. He presented that with a lot of the technical stuff. So, members, if it's all right, I'm going to ask Mr. Strom to really glide over the governor's stuff very quickly and get to more of what's new in our bill. So, thank you, Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, members, Ms. Larson and I will be glad to go through the bill draft as quickly as we can for you. We'll try to highlight those things.
Excuse me, but good morning, Ms. Larson. I'm sorry I didn't see you along the row there. Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, you have two documents in front of you that we'll be using to essentially reach the intent of the chair as we understand it. A14-0977 is the delete all amendment, and along with that in your packet is an amendment labeled H3171A4. That tries to bring the bill into, that's just before you, you're not going to act on that today, but that tries to bring the bill into the shape the author asked us to put it in for today's hearing. So those two documents are in front of you, and as quickly as we can, Mr. Chair, we'll go through those documents. The bill is organized by articles at this point in time in our usual format. In Article 1, the General Education...
I'm sorry, last time I'll interrupt you, Mr. Strom, but what we'll do is take each article and then open up for questions after that, if that's okay.
That so, sounds
all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in Article 1, Section 1 is simply from 3171, section, which is the governor's bills. Section 2 is the correction to the statutory language for the levy recognition shift. This language was not in a bill that was brought to us, but this essentially restores the statutory language to match the condition we currently face, which is no levy recognition shift. Section 3 was from Representative Davney's bill regarding the enrollment priorities for PSEO students. That was a bill we heard just earlier last week. I can get a whole bunch out of the way for you, Mr. Chair. Four and five are both from the governor's bill. Section 6, the English learners bill, reflects what the committee heard in House File 2679 with the addition, as Ms. Johnson mentioned, that the formula is also being increased for the basic English learner aid from $704 to $726. And those two provisions are in Section 6 and 7 of the bill.
Sure. Please. Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, members, with respect to the provision on English learner, there is language added that was part of Representative Mariani's English learner proposal, and that is to say that if an English learner has met the state cutoff score for English language proficiency, but if the student's teachers determine that the student still needs additional English language services in order to successfully participate in the classroom, the English learner remains eligible for English learner funding.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 8 was Representative Slocum's bill. When that bill was heard, there was a slightly different structure to that. Under the current format of the bill on line 5.25 of the draft, you can see that the program has turned into a grant program. where the commissioner can award grants to recovery programs of up to $125,000 per program for the additional recovery program staff. Mr. Chair, members, sections 9 is from the governor's bill that we've talked about. Section 10 is the basic formula increase of 1%, which Ms. Johnson mentioned. Sections 11 through all the way down through 20 we can ignore, as those are technical changes and from the governor's bill, House File 3171. The only difference being that the term location equity revenue was changed in the tax bill that was enacted on Friday to local optional revenue, so that language is new, but the effect remains the same. Then, Mr. Chair, starting with Section 21, the safe schools provision that we heard, House File 1917, is included in the bill. Section 22 is another provision related to the shifts that this committee has not seen before, but again, this just returns the statutory language to 9010 for the aid payment shift to reflect the current amount that's paid in that program. Section 23, again, from the governor's bill, House File 3171. Then Section 24, this committee heard just last week, is House File 2230, and Section 25 accompanies that as well, amending the effective date. Finally, Mr. Chair, in Article 1, Section 26 is the General Education Aid Appropriation. And let me just talk for a moment about two things that are slightly different from last year. When we amend an appropriation from the previous year, if that appropriation was in law from the previous year, it'll show up out of order. We're always used to the appropriation showing up at the end of the article, but because we're amending a law, it shows up before other uncodified language and the regular appropriations. So a little bit of order that'll change for members this year. The second thing to note about this is that these appropriation numbers reflect changes to the forecast base as well as policy changes. And so if you look on page 19, line 20, you can see for fiscal year 2014, we're not changing any policy related to general education revenue, but because of the repayment of the shift, the appropriation goes from $6.05 billion to $6.85 billion. And that $800 million increase simply reflects the essentially the order in which the shift gets repaid and the way that plays through in the appropriation. So there's no policy change there, and it makes it a little harder to use the bill to determine policy changes. So on line 19.20, that simply is telling us what the base looks like, no policy change there. But it's quite a bit different. And for other appropriations in the bill, you'll see the same thing, that these forecast adjustments may mean they're up because of the shift or down because of a change in pupil counts and things. So it makes it much harder to use the bill as a tool to determine what the actual spending or cuts are in the proposals. And instead, the spreadsheet will be a much better guide for you as you're looking to see the effect of legislation. Mr. Chair, members, then Section 27 is the new appropriation of $500,000 for the recovery schools program. And that, Mr. Chair, is a quick summary of Article 1.
Representative Erickson. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Ms. Larson, in Section 6, under the English Learner Subdivision 2, would you clarify, the way I'm understanding this is we're funding English language learners from 5 to 6 years. However, if a teacher determines that the child is not ready at any point, grades 4 through 12, that can be extended. Is that correct?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, the point is this. The experience of a number of English learners and the observation of people who work with them is that the level of proficiency demonstrated on the state assessment is really not sufficient to have a successful academic experience in the regular classroom. So now there are two criteria for determining proficiency. One is the state measure that we're using, but the other is consistent with a state plan, which already exists in statute, to say that it has to be the judgment of the teachers that the individual has sufficient level of proficiency to have a chance at a successful academic experience in the regular classroom, because there seems to be some disparity between the measure of proficiency on the test and the ability to work to have a sufficiently high level of proficiency to have academic mastery.
Representative Erickson.
So, Mr. Chair, I think that means then that the child can remain an English language learner beyond. I understand what you said, but still, if the teacher's judgment that the child is not ready to why would we limit them to the 6 years if they still need English language learner lessons and goals?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, this is not affecting the cap. There are some number of children who demonstrate proficiency on the test in fewer than the number of years of the cap. And this is to say, if they demonstrate proficiency under that cap, but the teachers determine that they will have difficulty with the academic responsibility in the classroom, then they can still function, but the cap is not affected.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, me. Yeah, okay. Sorry, I was distracted by my comrade here to my left. I just had a question on QCOMP. Actually, it comes from my district superintendent. He says, has there been talk about QCOMP? Will this still be around in years to come? I noticed on page 5 of the summary, there's a reference to QCOMP. Are we doing anything on that?
Representative Grunhagen, two things on QCOMP. Last year, the conference committee agreed to a Senate provision to roll QCOMP out of the general education formula. So this has caused us to put it in a different place in statute. The second thing about QCOMP is there is a cap on the total amount of dollars that can be spent on QCOMP, and we are reaching that cap now. So this is going to be an issue for districts, because they're, up until now, any district that wanted to apply, if its plan was approved, could join QCOMP. But starting in the next year or so, we're to the point where we've reached the cap, and in order for additional districts to go into QCOMP, the legislature will need to raise the cap if they want additional districts to join QCOMP. So an affirmative action by the legislature will be necessary for additional districts to join QCOMP.
Oh, okay. Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair, and yep. Thank you, Tim.
Very good. Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. not sure if it's appropriate to ask this question at this time, but could you tell me where we are with the early learning scholarship issue and the cap and what's going to happen with that?
Yeah, Representative Van Zelt, there is no language in here at all that changes the current program. Representative Van Zelt.
That's kind of unfortunate, Mr. Chair, but because we're hearing from rural providers that the cap issue is major in the further development of that program, and that's kind of a shortcoming here.
Yeah, and Representative Van Zelt, one thing, if you do raise the cap, you've got to also increase the dollars if you want to keep the same number of students.
Very aware of that. Very aware.
Yeah, and so that was part of that too. So, any other Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with Representative Van Zels on that one. But on Section 15, on the redefinition of the equity region,
should be.
Is there a? This was kind of described as a policy change. Is there financial issues here or financial changes that will result from this, if not in this bill, but in the future?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, that's my mistake. With the author's amendment, the change in the author's amendment will be a variation on Representative Fitzsimmons' bill. And essentially what happens under the way the language is drafted is those districts that are in the four counties that are included in this larger statistical area, which include Wright, Sherburn, Isanti, and Chisago, any school district with their home office in one of those four counties will also qualify for the 25% bump. They won't be switching regions, but within their region, essentially, they'll get a 25% bump as the metro districts do. So if you go back to that printout from yesterday, essentially we're going, I believe, from 48 to 65 school districts that will get that 25% bump. So I apologize for skipping over that one. That's essentially accomplished in the A4 amendment.
All right, thank you.
And Mr. Strom, will we see tomorrow or sometime kind of a list of those districts that
Mr. Chair, we're hoping you'll have a nice printout in front of you tomorrow.
Very good. All right. So then that you'll get to see the districts that are impacted there. Thank you very much. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, I remember back to where we had some school districts move their offices because they had part of the district that would qualify in previous verbiage and statute for this. How many districts could possibly do that? In other words, how many districts have a portion within this new area but not their main office and could do as some districts in past practice did, shift their office in order to avail themselves of this category?
Mr. Chair, members, the printout, and I'll pass this printout back to Representative Quam, that we had yesterday showed that there were 48 school districts with their home office in the metro counties. Another 11 districts have some territory within those seven county area. 65 districts have their home office in the 11 county area, and 82 school districts. So another 17 districts have some area within that 11 county area. So the minimum count, 48, is home office in the 7 county. The maximum count, if you went to the 11 county metro area, would be 82 districts. And I'll send the printout over to you so you can see which districts those are.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for clarification, none of those districts are in the third largest city of the state of Minnesota with its over 70 languages being spoken in the homes of their children.
I don't, Representative Quam, I don't believe that area is in there. I don't believe so quite yet. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, two questions. One, just a follow-up to this. Then are we going to need legislation that says you can have your office in the 11 county district area, but you must serve within the 7 county metro district area?
You know, Representative Hertaus, we did wrestle with this quite a bit, and it is, and you know, there was a difference when the location equity revenue was in. It was different for metro, different rules than in the equity. I mean, we just had, so we're trying to somehow clean that up, but there's a ways to go.
Well, I hope we're not inviting 17 more districts to relocate their office.
We maybe are.
The second question,
Representative Hertaus,
back to QComp. So those who are on QComp are going to continue to have that assistance in perpetuity until the law is changed.
Mr.
Chair, Representative Hertaus, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions on Article 1? Very good. Mr. Strom, Article 2.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Larson will go through Articles 2 and 3.
For all right. Ms. Larson?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members, the first two sections in Article 2 are the same. One applies to school districts generally, and the other applies to school districts in first-class cities. The provision came from Representative Faust, and what it's intended to do is ensure that discipline that pertains to disciplinary actions for a teacher who is discharged due to a conviction of child abuse or neglect or a final determination of maltreatment is included in the teacher's record, and that the data is transmitted to the Board of Teaching and the Education Department, who are responsible for licensing duties, both statutory and administrative. And in addition, there's a requirement that school boards and other hiring entities must contact both the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education to discover whether or not, or determine whether or not, the teacher, there is information about the teacher in this regard. And this is, it's the same language in both sections 1 and 2.
Mr. Chair, members, sections 3 through 5 are from the governor's bill. Section 6 is the concurrent enrollment provision. This is amending the appropriation to increase the concurrent enrollment funding by the amount that's on the spreadsheet. Section 7 is the early childhood literacy increase. This is the Serve Minnesota request from House 12 2477 that the committee heard last week. This provides an additional $500,000 for the math tutors under the Serve Minnesota program.
Mr. Chairman, Section 8 is a bill that Representative Seltzer introduced, and it's designed to have the commissioner inform the legislature about how best to align Minnesota's Alternative Teacher Professional Pay System, QCOMP, and the Teacher Development and Evaluation Program that goes into effect statewide in 2014-2015. Section 9 is a proposal that I believe you heard yesterday from Representative Isaacson, and it also is a direction to the commissioner, again, to consult with experts about both secondary and post-secondary career and technical education programs, their content, status, and the resources available for specific programs in Minnesota. Part of the examination involves the looking at the extent to which both secondary and post-secondary programs together offer students a progression of coordinated, non-duplicative courses that a student would need to successfully complete a career in technical education program. The commissioner is directed to report to the legislature by February 1 of 2015, and included in the report must be information about each district's equipment, resources, and relationships with post-secondary institutions as they pertain to career and technical education opportunities.
Mr. Chair, members, there's an appropriation then in Section 10, and I think that's the end of Article 2.
Have you got any questions on Article 2? All right. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to go back to the section on the additional funding for Serve Minnesota for the reading.
Section 7.
Mr. Chair, members, I misspoke. That should be the Reading Corps money. I said math, and I meant reading. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Strom. And I just wanted to see if we have any information on whether more children will be served because of the dollar increase and how many children that would be.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the I'll see if I can find a child reference for you. The I think the Serve Minnesota folks told us that somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000 per each additional tutor for the year, and I'll see if I can translate that into a child number for you here. I might have something in the email from them about that.
Very good. We'll get that. Thank you. Any other questions on Article 2? All right. Article 3, Special Education. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, Section 1 of that Article 3 came from a House file that Representative Dabney introduced at the request of NAMI, among others. And what it's designed to do is to require school districts to inform the public about their restrictive procedures plan and staff training on de-escalating techniques. It's also changes the date by which stakeholders annually recommend goals to the Education Commissioner for reducing use of restrictive procedures, and there is a requirement that the Commissioner report to the legislature. Finally, there is a requirement that the Commissioner have annual summary data on district use of reasonable force. This section is effective immediately.
Mr. Chair, members, sections 2 through all the way down through 10 are from House File 3171 and are basically conforming changes or in sections 2 and 3, including the governor's change to the Faribault Academies for the one-to-one licensed aides. But otherwise, all of those provisions were from House File 3171, as we heard when the governor's bill was presented. So that brings us up to section 11.
Mr. Chairman, members, Section 11 comes from a bill that Representative Sawatsky carried. The legislature in 2013 directed that the Commissioner of Education facilitate a task force on caseload management. And among the recommendations of that task force were a number of statutory changes. This particular section gives the commissioner expedited rulemaking authority to make those recommended changes. The Governmental Operations Committee added a cross-reference to Subdivision 5 of the expedited rulemaking section with the effect that if 100 people request it, a public hearing must be held on the rules being proposed.
Mr. Chair, members, that takes us through Section 12, the appropriations section for the that accompanied Representative Daphne's bill. That's the end of Article 3, and if I could jump back to Representative Will's question, the Surf Minnesota Soda folks have suggested about 750 additional students could be served with the $500,000.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a reference to Representative Will's question, do we know how many more volunteers will be trained?
I think about, is that, Mr. Chair, I'm getting too nearsighted. Mr. Downham was signaling me, but if he could just answer that maybe
sure,
real quick.
And that's fine. We'll do that. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, committee, Representative Erickson, approximately 25 members.
Your name, please.
I'm sorry, Josh Downham with Serve Minnesota. We will be hiring approximately 25 additional Reading Corps members and augmenting with additional private dollars on top of the $500,000. We're still in the process of trying to get those additional private dollars, but we're hopeful to be able to go potentially up to 30 members with the additional private dollars.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, anything on Article 3 on questions? Otherwise, we'll move to Article 4.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 4 is the facilities article. Most of these bills, again, we've heard in just the last week or so they're probably pretty fresh in members' minds. Starting in Section 1, this is the Iron Range Joint Powers Cooperative Facility Program. Again, a reminder that the language is broad enough to allow other school districts as well. The one difference in this then, as it was presented, relates to some of the teacher provisions. And we can talk about those in detail later if you like. Sections 2 extend the consolidation transition aid from the current dollar amount up to 300, but makes that first effective for fiscal year 17. Sections 3 and 4 are essentially conforming sections to House File 2629. Section 5, as Ms. Johnson mentioned, is the debt service equalization levy programs and the equalizing factors. What's happening here is, as she mentioned, with the decrease or with the increase in levies in one area, we need to decrease them in another to reach our zero levy target. So the aid amount of the cost of those programs is used to raise debt service equalization aid. So essentially what happens is the spending's made on the program on the levy side, another levy is reduced, in this case the debt service levy, and the difference then is paid for in state aid. Section 6 is the provision related to the Natural Disaster Debt Service Program. This was brought to you by the Representative Sundin last week. This program remains in the same form as it was presented to the committee. Sections 7 is also a corresponding change to Representative Sundin's bill. Sections 8 and 9 were the bill we heard yesterday from Representative Seltzer regarding review and comment. Section 10 is one of several provisions related to the transfer of the EMID schools to Roseville and to the Purpich Center. Section 10 is from the amendment, the DE2 amendment that the committee saw yesterday. It exempts the students attending the Crosswinds from the declining enrollment revenue calculation for the next couple of years during the transition as the Crosswinds facility is moved from EMID to Purpich. Section 11 is the change in the taconite provision that accompanies House File 2629. One other word about this, the tax bill that passed and was enacted on Friday included a number of changes to the taconite funding system to essentially put money into that taconite account that was a part of Representative Metz's bill. So the funding stream for that has been established in the tax bill that was recently passed. Sections 12 and 13 are conforming changes to Representative Sundin's bill. Section 14 and sections 14, 15, and 16 are the same as the committee saw yesterday regarding the transfer of the Crosswinds facility from EMID to Purpich. Section 17 was part of House File 2696, and this is just simply an increase in the appropriation for the telecommunications access aid at $5 million per year. Section 18 is the transfer of the Harambe School from the EMID organization to the Roseville School District. This language is the same as you saw yesterday. Section 19 is the transition requirements for the Crosswinds School. Section 20 is from House File 2429, and this provision allows the pardon me, Mr. Chair, allows the Rosemont School District to lease for a transportation facility. The language is slightly less limiting than previous when this committee saw it. There's no requirement that they reduce other levies by the same amount. The result on the tracking would have been the same, so the language is just slightly less convoluted than before. And finally, Mr. Chair, Section 21 is the repeal that was part of Representative Seltzer's bill of the consultation with those projects with a value of less than $500,000 under the review and comment.
Any questions on Article 4? Representative Hertaus.
Yes, I had a question on Section 11, Subdivision 8, the wool stockings provision of the Education Committee. No, just kidding.
Very good. Representative Anzels, we don't need to get him too fired up today. All right. We'll go to Article 5.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 5 is the nutrition article. This is the same as what passed the House floor in House File 2480.
Article 6.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 6 is...
I'm sorry. Oh. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I read this, and my understanding is that there could still be children denied a lunch if they fall out of some protected classification, so we still have that open issue and didn't resolve?
Representative Quam, that would be correct. I suppose if you're outside the free and reduced, you might not get a meal. There's a potential, I suppose. Yeah. All right.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 6, Section 1 of Article 6 is the developmental screening aid. This was part of House File 2378, but at a reduced level. Essentially, the screening aid is increased by $5 for every 3- or 4-year-old child who is screened. Section 2 increases the school readiness funding by about $2 million per year beginning in fiscal year 15. Section 3 is from House File 2691 and puts a firm date on the date that a report on the evaluation of the early learning scholarship, when that report is done. Sections 4, 5, 6, four, five, six, and nine are related to the adult basic education program. There's a couple of things run together here that's primarily the language you're seeing from House File 3171 with a couple of changes. The primary change in Section 5, the annual growth factor for the adult basic education program, is increased from 2.5% to 3%. Section 7, Mr. Chair, is just the line item appropriation for school readiness. Section 8 is the line item appropriation for the development and screening aid. Section 9 is the line item appropriation for adult basic education aid. And Section 10 is the Northside Achievement Zone and St. Paul Promise Neighborhood Bills, House Files 2373 and 2275 that this committee heard. When those bills were presented to the committee, they were ongoing. The early draft of the bill had those as one time. The author's amendment, the A4 amendment, extends those as ongoing appropriations. So that's one difference from how the spreadsheet was originally and the bill was originally released yesterday, but those are ongoing.
Article 7.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 7 is the state agency's article. Ms. Johnson has done a nice job of going through the department budget for you. Some of the items that are rolled in the department budget are not going to have a line item associated with them, so they'll just be they'll be tracked separately on the spreadsheet, but they'll just be lumped into the Department of Education's total appropriation. For example, the amount for the special education rulemaking is just simply added without a specific instruction that that's what that money's for. But you can track the individual components on the spreadsheet. Section 2 is the appropriation for the Minnesota State Academies. This increase of $300,000 per year is to accompany the one-to-one certified aides provision. And Section 3 is a provision from 2180, taking the amount that was, I believe, determined in the Government Operations Committee of $294,000 to management and budget for PEEP in regard to filling out those insurance bids. So, Mr. Chair, that's a quick summary of Article 7.
And Article 8 is the, Representative Erickson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'll wait because I'm backtracking to Article 6.
Okay. Very good.
Mr. Chair, Article 8 is the forecast adjustments. Those changes have no policy implications in them, but simply correct the appropriations from last year for forecast.
All right. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I'm going back just a little bit back to Section 3 about the $294,000 appropriation for the PEEP bill. And I just was wondering if we do have anyone from MMD here today, if I don't know if now is the right time or later on, just to clarify how that money would be used.
I don't know. Is there anyone from MMD here?
Or if the chair would know.
I don't see that. I know that number is might be still Representative Will somewhat fluid. And may at some time even be less than what it is now. So I think that might be changing just a bit yet.
Okay, so maybe we'll come back to it.
I think if we can get folks here, we can talk about that more.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Anyone? Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, thanks for reducing it or whoever reduced it. Okay, I think it was $1 million before. Now it's down to $294,000.
That, Representative Grunhagen, that was Representative Murphy's work.
Okay. So, well, I'll thank her on the House floor.
Very good. Thanks. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who can answer this, but I'm in Article 6, Section 3. And my question has to do with what was done in 2013 in regard to the commissioner contracting with an independent contractor to evaluate the Early Learning Scholarship Program and then the recommendations that were supposed to ensue in regard to scholarship amount, efficiency, and effectiveness of the administration and the impact on kindergarten readiness. What's the status of that? Because our new language requires a report, but not until January 15th of 2016. So did we just not remember to include some kind of accountability last year, or is there another issue?
Hmm. Anyone care to... Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Cordy will come down and answer.
Mr. Okay. Chair, Representative Erickson, Darren Cordy with the Minnesota Department of Education. Yes, you're correct that there was, as part of the Early Learning Scholarships Bill last year, a requirement for the department to contract with an independent evaluator to do this. However, there was just no due date that was put into the bill at that time last year for when this report would be due. So that's all that this language is doing, is putting in a due date for that report. It's something we worked with the Mini Minds folks on and kind of all agreed would be enough time to make sure that we know what is happening with the scholarships, enough time to make sure that the review is done, and time to do a proper evaluation in order for you all to make some decisions.
Representative Erickson.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Cordy, has the commissioner then contracted with an independent contractor and begun some work, or what is the status of that?
Mr. Cordy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, my understanding is that, yes, we have entered into an agreement with, I believe, the University of Minnesota to do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Cordy, thank you. Representative Erickson, thank you. Anything else, questions on the Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you have a really good bill here. And I just want to point out two small items that you have here. And I apologize for not being here earlier when we went through the spreadsheet. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in these two small appropriations that are being recommended here. One is to our Board of School Administrators. And, Mr. Chair, I know you're aware that that board is responsible for much of the leadership development through licensure of those who are in charge of our, who run and manage our schools. And obviously with all the, new expectations that we've had around career and college readiness, expectations of K-12, it's going to be vitally important that we have really up-to-date, strong leadership in our schools. This particular board members collects about, I think it's right around $300,000 a year in fees. However, those go into the general fund, and then we return roughly a little bit half of that back. This appropriation will allow them to fulfill their obligations for the rest of this biennium, and then puts them on a much more equal footing. Arguably, they're going to need some more resources over time as we have these stepped up expectations of our principals and administrators. So I was really glad to see it's a small investment, but I think it's going to make a real big deal for that board. And then, Mr. Chair, you also have the one-time appropriation for the Board of Teaching. I think that's really wise given the expectations that we continue to evolve around teacher licensure. One of the things that we're proposing in the policy bill is for that board to take a close look at areas that may require a new licensure approach. And again, this is tied to our efforts to push career and college readiness expectations out of our K-12 schools. So there are things like applied learning, career explorations that may translate into, may or may not, but may translate into new licensure parameters of our professional teachers. And then finally, Mr. Chair, on the Board of Teaching, in our committee, we wrangled honestly and tough around the so-called basic skills component of the MTLE test. And in the end, what we came out with our committee, I believe, is a good balance. I hope it's a bipartisan approach. We dipped into Republican bills to craft a response to the MTLE, so we married language that our colleagues across the aisle had put together with expectations that we have as well on our side to be able to recognize those odd, if you will, teacher licensure realities where we have foreign language teachers coming in from outside of the nation to provide valuable instruction in foreign languages. So I think we've got a really good mix of Republican and Democrat approach to the basic skills dilemma, test dilemma that we've had. But it does require the Board of Teaching to continue to pay very close attention. They're still under a rulemaking mandate from last year to make sure that whatever we do this year, that they align their board requirements with our statutory directive this year. So I know it's a one-time investment, but it's a really critically important investment at this point. So, Mr. Chair, these are small appropriations, but they're vitally important if we're going to continue to push teacher quality and principal leadership quality in our schools. And I just want to acknowledge that and thank you for proposing to us that we make those investments.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Radenovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a comment as well. I'm obviously very proud of all the work that we've done in the Education Committee here over the last year. And I continue to be proud of this bill here. But I did want to put in a word, based on, I think, what we see to be a bold education initiative. Just last night I was reading, I think it was the Washington Post, and in Tennessee, the Republican governor actually proposed that the state of Tennessee make all community college free. And it's an effort to bring 55% of their workforce up to post-secondary level. And I think here in Minnesota, as we look at our own competitiveness nationwide and globally, we've got our own bold initiative, and that was the funding of the early childhood scholarships for the first time last year. And I think we can be very proud of the $40 million that we allocated to the program, but in my experience, I've had a couple conversations with families in need of these scholarships in rural Minnesota, and there seem to be two problems right now. And one of the problems is that the level of scholarship is $5,000, while the cost of a Head Start program where I'm at is about $7,500. And so we have a mismatch between the resources necessary and the resources available. And in addition to that, we also see that many more rural counties will be coming online in the next year, including one of my counties in Aiken. And so while the same appropriation exists, there'll be more need going forward. And while I recognize that the initial appropriation only covers 9% of the need total in the state, I hope that this committee going forward will continue to look at the necessary investment. We understand that there's a 16-to-1 investment or return on investment based on the Rolnick study, as well as other studies that indicate more like a 10-to-1 return on investment. But at any rate, we know that these programs are valuable. And while I know that we didn't have the opportunity to fund everything this year, I hope that we'll continue to keep an eye on the scholarship program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just mine is just a little bit back on Article 3, Section 11 under the rulemaking authority for special ed task force. Is the goal here, Representative Swatsky has a bill that wants to reduce the paperwork and reporting. My experience on the school board was sometimes the staff spends more time filling out paperwork and reporting than they do with the actual student. And so is the goal here for them to try to streamline some of that and maybe evaluate some of the things that we're doing in that special ed that make it cumbersome for the staff or teacher to actually work with the special ed student?
Very good. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, the in Article 3, Section 11, that particular provision is in one of two bills that Representative Sawatsky is carrying. One of the two bills has to do with the development of an online statewide reporting system related to special education reporting requirements. The other bill, and this Section 11 is part of that bill, was to reflect the recommendations of the task force for statutory changes to make statutes consistent and the rules consistent with statute. So in the task force report that was submitted to the legislature, there are specific recommendations for rule changes. And what this does is simply give the commissioner expedited rulemaking authority to make the specific recommendations for rule changes that are in that report submitted to the legislature. That is separate from the Sawatsky proposal having to do with the online system.
Representative Grunhagen.
Just one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Is the last year there was some discussion about evaluating the requirements of special ed in terms that we have higher some discussion about evaluating the requirements of special ed in terms that we have higher requirements than what the feds do, and as to their effectiveness and their cost. And is there anything in here that would address that area?
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, members, no, there is not.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. But I'd like to do, we need to adjourn, or at least recess, right at 9:45 today, because there's a big meeting coming in, so which means we'll come back tonight to hear testimony. So I'd like to move the testimony if we could. Unless someone has, Representative Quam, did you? Okay, Representative Reinert, you're on the list too. And Representative Woodard?
Just very quickly, Mr. Okay. Chair, just to echo some of the comments about the early learning scholarships, and just with one minor correction, and that is that this was passed with bipartisan support back in 2012, so this wasn't the first time the legislature has looked at this. But it is certainly an area that I think is glaringly missing from this bill, and is going to have to be dealt with, and is so critical, and it has the broad bipartisan support, I think, that we're looking for with these kinds of education reforms, and I'm hopeful that between now and the end of session, we'll have a solution there. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Reinert, did you?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to respond briefly to Representative Grunhagen and say that yesterday in Representative Sawatsky's presentation around her bill related to the online system she's moving toward, she also discussed how they would proceed in following through on that recommendation to work as a task force reducing paperwork, and that she's going to continue that effort, and the online piece is just a portion of that. So.
Thank you. And Representative Quam moves the March 24th, 2014 minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The March 24th minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Quam. All right, at this time, thank you very much, staff, for the overview there. So we'll take testimony at this time. We just kind of quickly, and, you know, we can finish up this morning and not have to come back tonight. Who wants to start? And please proceed. And you come down to the chairs, and we'll just keep going. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doeslin, and as many of you know, I wear many hats, so I will try and be brief. First of all, I represent the intermediate school districts, and I would like to send a very warm thanks to the member of the committees for their inclusion of the $5 increase for the Safe Schools Levy for the intermediate school districts. That resource will go very far, and the intermediate school district superintendents are really appreciative of your inclusion of that provision in the bill, and also just kind of your work to better understand the very important work that the intermediates do to serve some of our most challenging students. And secondly, representing the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, I'd just like to thank the members of the committee for the formula increase. You will hear many of us today talk about how important the per pupil formula is to the everyday functioning and school district budgets. And then secondly, just thank you for the inclusion of the review and comment recommendations from the facilities task force. I know that you will hear from your school business managers back home how important those changes are and how much they will change the kind of nature of the work that they are able to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee Member Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I will just say ditto to everything Ms. Doeslin said. I will add the thank you very much for the English Language Learner funding changes. As you mentioned, that is really going to help attack the achievement gap. I'm going to stop, let other people. I'll just say this, Mr. Chair. I wish we were in Nebraska so you could just pass this and send it to the governor. Yeah. It's a great bill. Thanks.
There may be a unicameral amendment to the bill. Yeah, all right. Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with Schools for Education, also Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. Just to echo, I think the formula is the place to go. I think that, you know, and the committee making that decision here to put money on the formula, the extra 1%, greatly appreciated. Also appreciate the money going into the English language learners. In Schools for Equity and Education, we're seeing more English learners coming into our districts, and certainly our superintendents are and school boards are more aware of that now and see the need, and certainly I think putting money on the formula, not just talking about eligibility, but expanding the reimbursement rate is also extremely important. I would like to make one, suggest one small change in the better aligning alternative teacher pay systems. On page 25, line 34, C is not mentioned as one of the groups that needs to be consulted. And I, at some juncture, we'll need to amend. I don't like going to meetings, but some of my folks like to. So I've got to have something to do in the summer. Very this good. Looks like something I'll do. So that I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lundell. Please proceed.
Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, we appreciate the bill that you've brought forward. A lot of what has been said by our colleagues, we believe the additional dollars on the formula is a positive for all districts, all children in the state, so we thank you for that. We appreciate the inclusion of the Innovation Zone bill. We passed that bill 2 years ago and realized that we had only had 1 year where districts could apply. We have two innovation zones currently going. I've been contacted by other superintendents that are interested in becoming an innovation zone, and this bill will allow that to happen. So we're greatly appreciative of the fact that other districts are going to be provided opportunities to become innovation zones. Also, I want to appreciate the comments made by Chair Marquardt in terms of the concept of the teacher evaluation. The process is, as you all know, being implemented July 1st of 2014. But we're still hoping that we can continue conversations in the next sessions about possible dedicated funding for that. We appreciate the Chair's comments that is still an issue that needs to be addressed. With that, thank you for your work this year. We appreciate it, and thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and I will just echo what the previous testifiers have said. Between the formula, the ELL increase, which is the biggest, the first increase we've had in 10 years, given the change in our population, that goes hand in hand with the increase that you did for adult basic education, because those are the parents of those kids that are seeking those services. We just really appreciate the fact that during the unsession year that you made some investments to help close the achievement gap.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. Again, the landscape of economics here are really good for us. I did want to put in just a comment as well that the little bit of money that's buried in here for the Board of School Administrators is really important, and we're really glad to see it. They're hanging on, trying to do very, very good work. And that little help is going to make a big difference in that. Chair Mariani has authored some bills for them in the past and been a bit of a shepherd, and they're a little bit overlooked. When we created them, they got $75, you know, a person in membership. They don't get that transferred over to them, so they've had some operating trouble. So really ask you that you flag that and keep that in the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota. We heartily endorse the chair's movement to fund additional funds on top of the general ed formula. We've got a lot going on in schools. We've got to face teacher evaluation. We have ELL changes, World's Best Workforce, and Career and Technical Studies. So we have a lot of stuff going on, and that 1% can really help us move forward. So it was a very wise decision. Not every district spends it the same, and putting it on the general ed formula is very positive. We're excited about the review and comment, the Representative Seltzer bill that was in there. We think that's going to save districts a lot of money in a streamlined process. Concurrent enrollment, we're thrilled about. We're happy to see money to figure out what to do with our most challenging special needs students. So that money to study about better ways instead of using prone restraint to deal with children who really have issues in our schools should be very beneficial and far-reaching. That's not easy stuff to find, so it really helps. Last but not least, we like the innovation zones. We've heard from our school boards, sort of like Mr. Amoroso heard from his superintendents. That's a good program, and the more that goes, people want to participate. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Linda Sandvig. I'm here on behalf of the Literacy Action Network, and we represent adult basic education programs across the state. So we're here to thank you for restoration of the growth formula increase. And we also like to thank you for the language that's in there that increases the percentages and supplemental with the cutbacks in the federal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Nancy Hilden, and I'm here today on behalf of Many Minds. And unlike some of the folks that have been up here, I'm not here to thank you yet. We're just at the start of this process. Couple of observations I'd like to make. Number one, Representative Winkler's bill gave very flexible authority to the commissioner of the Department of Education to really serve the needs of individual children rather than just fitting into what certain providers might find beneficial. And I think that needs to be taken up and considered by your committee going forward so that we have a better model going forward on scholarships. Secondly, thank you very much, Representative Radinovich and Anzels. Your comments are important. We have full rollout in the metro area. Half of the counties in rural Minnesota are only rolled out right now, but will be by the end of this year. And you have flat money going into scholarships. What I observe is that one of the complaints that we are hearing pretty loudly about scholarships is that they're just not enough. It's just not enough. And you can kill something by making it so small and inconsequential that it's easy to turn away from it. So I would strongly encourage you to really keep in mind that what this model does is engages the parent in making decisions about what is going to happen with their child. It's different than CCAP, and it's different than simply adding aid formula on top of what already exists. And I would just leave you with this. You are challenged with expanding education to something different than it is today. We are talking about early learning starting at age zero, and we know that value, 0 to 5. That is not normally what is contemplated in the budget for K-12, and I know you call yourself E-12, and we're going to keep pushing harder to make E a stronger component of what E-12 education is about. So thank you for your time, and we will be working hard to encourage you to bring scholarships up to a higher level in the coming year. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Hillen. Thank you so much. I want to inform members also, after talking with Mr. Winkler, and last Thursday when we had the hearing on the scholarships, through my time mismanagement, we wound up with only about 10 minutes left to really talk about things, and issues came up. So I've asked Representative Winkler to come back on Thursday. So we're going to talk about this more on Thursday, the scholarships, and talk about overall some of these issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Matt Burdick with NAMI, Minnesota. We just want to say thank you for the investment to help children who have been subject to a high use of prone restraints. This was a high priority for us this session, and we're just very grateful to see it in the bill. So thank you.
Thank you for being here. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Elaine Keefe, and I also wear many hats. On behalf of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, I want to thank you for the funding to help reduce the use of prone restraints and other restrictive procedures. We think that's really important, and thank you. On behalf of the Minnesota Educational Media Organization, which as of July will be changing its name to the Information and Technology Educators of Minnesota, ITEM, so that's an acronym we hope you'll become familiar with, I want to thank you for the increase in funding for telecommunications equity aid. Our bandwidth needs are just exploding in schools, and the current funding is prorated at a rate of 43%, and this is a very badly needed increase, and thank you so, so much for that. Lastly, on behalf of the Minnesota School Nutrition Association, I want to thank you for the funding to make reduced-price lunch free. We really appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and Member, Sam Wallace up with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Again, thank you for a wonderful bill. Thank you for Chapter 150 that was signed in on Friday, creating equity for many districts across the state. And I want to echo Ms. Keefe's comments about the Telecommunications Equity Access piece. That's something my colleagues hadn't brought up before, but that is a very key component for addressing unmet needs in rural Minnesota as we look at online testing being mandated. Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the service cooperatives, would just ask the committee to keep in mind, I think a little bit of mission creep here as this bill now starts to fund other state agencies outside of the Department of Education, driving money to MMB for purposes that are typically outside of the jurisdiction or realm of this committee. So I know that number's gotten a little bit better over time, but I just want to keep an eye on that, too, and on the precedent that that sets. But, Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the work in the bill.
Thank you very much. Anyone else here to testify on 3171? So please come forward. I think we have one last testifier. Good morning. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chair and representatives. My name is Andrea Berrano Robinson. I am here in support of this particular bill. However, I would like to see early childhood have a little bit of more increased funding. I have three children, seven, four, and 1 year old. I am a parent of Robbins Area Schools, and my representative is Lyndon Carlson and Ann West on the Senate side. And I believe in early childhood. I believe in early childhood in the fact that I have a seven-year-old who is a second grader. He reads at a fifth grade level. He does math at a fifth grade level. And he's very intelligent. And if it hadn't been for early childhood, he started early childhood programming when he was an infant in ECSE and switched to ECSE when he was 18 months old. Early childhood special ed, if those of you who are not familiar with those terms. And he was double dosed in those primary years. And he's where he's at now. I have a four-year-old who is currently being double dosed at the Fraser School. He has mild autism, I just found out in December. And he is also receiving services in early childhood family education and early childhood special education. And those, and I would like to peer in the future and know that he is going to be okay. And I feel that if early childhood funding gets the correct funding formula, that all kids in this great state of Minnesota will be served and will have the best chance of entering kindergarten at the correct age level, and there won't be any having to figure out how to substitute some education.
So, thank you, Ms. Robinson.
Thank you.
Anyone else care to testify on 3171? Seeing none. Okay, when we adjourn here, we have to clear the entire room because there are going to be ticketing as people come in. It's like between games and or rounds in a wrestling tournament. They move you out before the finals, so everyone's going to have to go out before we do that. And, you know, I have one more speech to give, so we're going to have to come back tonight so I can finish my one speech. I really apologize, but no. We're sitting good. We will. Amendments are due at 2 p.m. Today, and otherwise we come back at 8:15 tomorrow morning and mark up the bill. So thank you, members. Thank you all. We are adjourned.